So, Jim, why in the world would we do 27 panels?
Why do we do anything podcasts? We do? Why do we do all of the things we do?
That is a big question. I'm not sure we can cover that in a podcast, but
sure, we can answer that in like 15 minutes, right? Why we do everything we do and all the reasons behind it. And
I think we probably have all about two listeners left. And that would be it.
Everyone's like, all right, checking out already.
Yeah. But yeah, we got into this. I think you and I started talking about this at least a year ago.
Yeah, I resisted it so long.
Yeah. As long as you could keep resisting it.
Oh, God. So it was like, yeah, we have to.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think we said we were going to shoot for January. Hmm. And that was our goal back over a year ago. Yeah. And I think what compelled me to begin thinking about it was, you know, if we follow where people are going, and this is what is fascinating, is we get to work with so many people all across the country and now the world. And while we're coaching them and doing typing interviews and group coaching and all this other stuff that we're doing, and along with just interacting with folks who reach out to us, is that a lot of stuff that they say and what we're discovering doesn't always fit what's already there in the literature. And that's actually a really good thing.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't mean that the current literature is unhelpful. It's remarkably helpful. It means that we're always learning. That this is a system about people. And there is no way we can put people into a box. And none of us want to. And those of us who do the work in this world of the Enneagram and self-help understand that. Like, people are so complicated, and that we need better systems and better tools to really capture that.
You know, it's so funny because in preparation for work with a corporate client that we currently are working with, I went back and listened to like our very first episodes and like how we set some of this stuff up.
That must have been tough.
It actually was. No, it wasn't. It was crazy because I was like, we're actually being consistent, because one of the things we said back then is we're not tied to a particular model. We did the whole like the purpose of any model is to get you to a better model, to improve it, to stay with the Enneagram tradition that started as it's supposed to be based on self-reporting. Mm. It's not about putting people in a box. Like, we were saying all that stuff in the very first episode, and just I think two episodes ago or something, we published our 100th episode. It popped up. So I was like, oh, this actually, we're staying consistent to that. Mm. So the thing that we set out to do at the beginning was be curious about people. Yeah. Like, that's definitely been the emphasis from the beginning.
Yeah. Yeah. Because this is what helps us to grow. And I think the spiritual journey, however we define spirituality, is that it means more of an accepting of what is, as opposed to rejecting. So there's more of an accepting, more of an open-handedness, more of a willingness to be surprised, to learn. You know, any learning begins with a question, right? You have to know that you don't know something.
Yeah.
If you think you know everything, your learning ends there.
Yeah.
And if your learning ends there, so does your growth.
Yeah.
And what you've done, sadly, is you've reduced yourself, not just the world around you, to feel more, maybe feel safer in the world, maybe feel a bit more in control of your own environment. But you also reduce yourself by that. So whenever we think like we don't even think about it. We do this automatically, but just reduce, shrink our world so we feel better about it. We're also shrinking ourselves and our limitlessness down to something that is a dimension of who we are, but not the totality of who we are.
Well, this is why marketers say that people don't buy the best product. They buy the one that's easiest to understand.
Yeah.
Because there's always this temptation to be reductionistic. There's always something, this temptation to boil things down to the simple. And I want that in a vacuum cleaner. I don't want that in a friend.
Mm.
I can't relate to myself that way. Like, none of us are that simple. None of us fit into a box. I think, you know, from the beginning, one of the things we've really reacted against is this meme culture.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's slowed down a little bit in the last year than it was when we first started. It was like Enneagram was becoming very popular, and one of the things that was spreading a lot of that popularity was the meme culture.
Yeah.
And so there was like this conflicted feeling like, oh, a lot more people are listening to us because a lot more people are interested in the subject that we're interested in. But there's also so much of this reductionistic, because that is the temptation as humans. So the brain uses actually more calories than the rest of the body throughout the day, and it doesn't want to. Like, we're conservation creatures. And so one of the ways that we do this, we have sort of built-in mechanisms that are reductionistic.
Yeah, sure.
So it makes sense. The need makes sense. The desire to reduce to something we can understand, to something we can get our heads around, whether it's ourselves or someone else, going like, well, oh, they're just a two. Like, that's, of course they're doing that. Mm-hmm. That is so reductionistic. And it's been hard, honestly, to go down doing these 27 panels, because I don't know if you felt like this at any point in time, but there are so many point in times where I had this moment where I was like, I thought I understood this.
Oh, well, when I went into it, I was actually scared, to be truthful. That even as a sexual seven that tends towards risk, I was scared.
Yeah.
And I knew what I was scared of. I would never have said this at the beginning of this, because it would have been... I mean, I struggle with shame around this occasionally. Right. Like, oh, as a person that tends more towards risk, this actually scares me, because what if I'm wrong?
Yeah.
What if my theories are incorrect, you know?
Right.
And as a head type, I value my thoughts a lot. I value my models. I value the way I perceive the world. Mm. You know, so even while I talk about expansion, I can see it in me, the temptation to reduce even things to my level.
Right.
And so I thought, what if I'm wrong? What if a lot of what I've understood about people is turns out to be different, and quite a bit different?
Yeah.
And lo and behold, it did, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But the funny thing about it is, when you're willing to do this and you go into those places of, okay, this scares me, I'm going to go there, what you find is you find a level of comfort that's deeper than you expected. So it's interesting that the reverse happens. If you narrow and reduce your world, you actually become more terrified, more scared of what you don't know. You know, the more that you lean in, the less so. And so we got to learn a ton through this.
And what I liked, even though it scared me at the beginning, and it still scared me as I went through it, and there's part of it that still scares me now for a lot of reasons. One of them is, what if so much of what I learned is wrong? There's a little bit of that. There's an awareness that every time we've pushed into something new, are we pushing against the tradition? Are people within the Enneagram world going to reject us? Which I don't have a ton of concern about, but there is a little bit of that. Like these people have been doing this a lot longer. Who am I to say this? Or you know, any number of things. But so much of my concern about it was around me, how I saw things, how I'm perceived by others, you know, when you have a popular podcast on a subject. But the values is home base for me and for us. Mm-hmm. For both of us, we've been like, we have to come back to curiosity about people. That's an absolute value. Yeah. Curiosity is the centerpiece of relationship. Curiosity in really wanting to understand people, like coming back to that thing that Abby and I always say to a new couple when we sit down with them to coach them, is like, there's good news. You'll never understand each other.
Yeah.
And there's good news, because you have to stay curious. You have to keep learning about. And I got my mind blown through this season.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was just incredible. But we did learn a lot. And a lot of what we saw, there isn't much literature about. I've had several people reach out to me and be like, you know, where can I read more about like what I'm learning through your podcast? And I was like,
I get asked that.
I don't know.
So much. And at this point, because all of this is new and we see ourselves as part of many others who are in this wonderful world in using different tools like the Enneagram.
Yeah.
And we're all family. We're all part of this, and we're learning, and we're growing, and we're stretching. And so the literature is being written as we're doing this. And that's part of, you know, we looked at this, and you called it a research project. And I thought, that's exactly what we're doing. The Instincts is a research project.
About 3 weeks in, I realized, oh, no, we're not here to teach on Instincts.
We're here to learn. We're here to learn. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And of course, yes, we do have, because we've been talking to thousands of people, we have learned, you know, quite a bit. So that's what we put out into the world. But the day that we decide that we know now and we've arrived, and we have this knowledge and now we're just dispensing knowledge, I fear that day, because that's the day that I've lost who I am. I've lost the truth of my own growth and my own expansion.
Totally.
You know, that's what keeps me humble, very, very humble in this process is I have to do the work of my own growth. And as I do that, then I partner in solidarity with everybody else who's doing their growth, regardless of whether they're just starting in or have been doing it for many, many years.
Mm, that's so good. Yeah, both of us have had enough experience with the Western Christian theological world that we know not to trust dogma, because growth, evolution, change, expansion, thinking we know something and having it undone, that is reality.
Mm-hmm.
That is where we are, which is why we constantly pull away from the reductionistic, that temptation to just reduce people, to put them in boxes, to think we understand anyone. I used to really hate when I'd start a beginning of a coaching session, because almost 10 minutes into almost any coaching session I've ever had, I have thought, I have no idea what I'm going to say. I have no idea if I have anything to add to this person's life.
Mm-hmm.
How am I going to make it through and add anything of value?
Yeah.
But I fear the day I don't have that.
Yeah.
Because that is what keeps me curious, leans in, have this incredible experience. They take a huge step forward. And I usually end the call being like, I'm better at this than I've ever been at anything. But I start,
right.
I start
right.
every single call being like, I have no idea how I'm going to get through this because I have no idea what to do.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh,
the
yeah.
Curiosity. Yes.
That is a very much I relate to that a ton because that's how I feel too going into this. Yeah, explanations should serve the experience rather than trying the reverse, like making our experiences fit the sort of, you know, theories, doctrines, you know, whatever we've come up with, definitions we've come up with. And I think that that's what we're trying to do. And at best, that is what the world of the Enneagram is doing, is to say, we're listening to people as they self-report, and we're doing our best to give definition to it because we need it.
Yeah.
So as you were talking about earlier about, you know, so the reductionistic part of our brains and the expansion, I think both are necessary, right? So you can't expand forever and ever and ever. You also need some kind of distilling stuff into absorbable, you know, kind of concepts and ideas. And so that's what we do, but they should be in service of each other. Like, oh, that didn't quite describe that perfectly, or that experience is a bit broader than what we're describing it as. So, you know.
Yeah. And that's the statistician, mathematician guy who said that every model is useful but wrong.
Yeah.
This is what it comes down to. I used to ask myself this question whenever someone gave me feedback of any kind. I'd say, is that true? You know, even if it was like a criticism or something that called into question my character or whatever, the framework I'd ask is that true?
Mm.
And then it was really great when I shifted that to, is that helpful?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Shifting that internal question to, is this true? Is this real?
Yeah.
Or is it helpful? Is it true that all people fit into these 9 categories? You can't simplify it down in saying, well, you can give a specific definition of those 9 categories and every single person will fit exactly into that definition.
Right.
That doesn't work.
That's right. Yeah.
So
yeah.
And that's where you get into the dogma piece.
Yeah.
But is it helpful? Not much else is
like nothing I've ever
my
run
life.
Into. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nothing's challenged me to change as much. That's the thing.
Absolutely. There's a few models, right, that seem to add to the complexity of the Enneagram. You start out with the type and you're like, wow, that's forever deep. And then resource points. Oh my gosh. So then this is where I go. And then I go there. And you know, it just can get very complicated quickly.
Mm.
And so there are different theories out there. You know, we've run into tri-types, wings, centers, instincts. We want to hold all things loosely, and we want to be open to all things. But what we have found, and this is our discovery through a lot of coaching and seeing what actually works and listening to folks and their feedback, has been that centers and instincts have been the most helpful part of our coaching.
Yeah, the integration of the instincts, the integration of the centers, you know, not overly relying, overly dependent, overly spending too much emphasis of time, energy, focus in a one, but really drawing on all of these aspects that are within you but might be underrepresented.
Yeah, Exactly. That's the thing that I think folks are discovering is there's one of the centers that's very neglected, very repressed. And that's the one that almost always holds the key to unlocking who they are, to really freeing them from whatever's going on. Almost all the problems that people are dealing with in their lives have to do with not just the circumstance that's come into their lives, but how they're responding to it, usually through the dominant center that they've well developed. And same thing with the instinct. So there's it's fascinating how the instincts and centers seem to work very similarly and seem to have a lot of overlap. You know, there's an over-leveraging of one. There's the second one that tends to be the neutral one, the bridge. And then there's the third one that's the resisted, neglected, ignored, you know. Yeah.
One that takes so much freaking energy has been my experience in trying to develop that repressed instinct. Yeah. Repressed or resisted. I've definitely been using those two words for that instinct, you know, for myself, because it can be that way. But yeah, like these are the things that are most helpful. Making that shift to like, well, is this true? Does it fit into these categories? Yeah, we are not trying to reduce people into categories. We're trying to expand them into themselves. And we find that people are expanded into themselves, not by including something that isn't within them, but increasing something that is underrepresented in them.
Yeah. So one of the things that we've discovered is loops. We've talked about loops. People get caught in these, you know, head to heart to head, you know, head to body to head loops.
Yeah.
Oftentimes. Usually in that loop tends to kind of start to spin. I was talking to a type 8, for example, recently who said, I don't know how to handle this person in my life. And I could start picking up on anxiety and I could start picking up on this, you know, walking on eggshells.
Mm.
And this 8, I said to him, you're sounding a whole lot of like you're in your head right now. And very little in your body. There's that loop that goes from body to head. Now it's like your percentages have increased dramatically in the head space and very little in the gut. And instantly, he totally saw it. Yes, yes, 100%. So now what's happening is you're overthinking and then leveraging your body to do the action to try to serve and to try to respond right now to figure out, like, what am I supposed to do here? How am I supposed to be? What are you... And I said, you're almost sounding like a 2. And he was floored by that. Like, that's exactly what I'm doing. Yeah. I'm doing that entirely, right? And all I was doing was observing this loop, watching it happen in front of me and reflecting it back. And then to recognize, like, look, you know, the linchpin again for you would be that repressed, neglected, resisted center, which is...
Yeah.
The heart, you know,
yeah.
And recognizing, you know, what's happening there. So it tends to be almost always true that there are loops.
Yeah.
And again, these are, we just observe and then just, okay, if this is the case, then, you know, once again, it's integration. Because the wisdom isn't necessarily from the outside in. There's wisdom everywhere that we're always drawing on. But almost always, there's an internal wisdom that's already present within us, that gets hidden from our eyes because of our comfort in the dominant center, the dominant instinct, and using that and the second one to the neglect of the third. Well, once you bring that third one in and you really take time to breathe around it, relax into it, and sit with it for a little bit longer than you're comfortable, the oftentimes wisdom emerges. And when it does, it's, you know it. There's this inner knower that's like, I know this at a deep level, but I really am terrified of it, or I'm uncomfortable, or, you know, whatever. It's not going to be in the comfort of your traditional, well-worn, you know, groove of your loop, what you've been doing for your whole life.
Right. It isn't always comfortable because you're going outside of that well-worn path, but it is freedom. It's like being trapped indoors for too long and then taking a walk in the woods. You're like, oh, I really needed to get outside. I really needed to get outside of myself, outside of my loops, outside of my typical thing. And, you know, this is why I literally spend an entire month in my second level of group coaching talking about integrating the three centers, and we spent an entire week talking about the body. And I'm thinking about this because we just had this session yesterday with the one group. And it's often that's the one to return to, is the returning to the body. Because one of the things that I've noticed is we actually had a body first. Just the body was functioning. It was moving. It had its own intelligence. You've been around small kids. They are these bodies with lots of emotions running around.
Yeah.
The head comes on last. It doesn't even fully develop until the 20s. And yet we rely on it to solve all our problems.
Mm-hmm.
So many of our problems, we actually over-rely on the head space. The body's types go into a body-head loop, like thinking about what to do, do it, thinking about what to do. So they're bouncing into the head. They're trying to overuse the head. The heart types do it too. We talk about the heart-head loop all the time. Being in the heart, having emotions, bouncing the head, think about the emotions, bouncing back into the heart to feel. And then the head types, that's home base. So we all try to solve too much in the head space. But how many times do people just need to be reminded, like, if you go out and walk, take a walk on this problem, go for a run, go for a swim, you think about it completely different.
Mm-hmm.
You get a good night's sleep, you can handle something differently.
Yeah.
If you want to actually solve a problem, you actually have to integrate the three centers. And if you want to do it, you actually have to often return to the body, start with the body.
Yeah.
You know, move the body a little bit, breathe a little bit deeper. If you've been sitting at a computer all day, if you're sitting at a computer right now, you're listening to this, you might notice your breath is really shallow. Breathe.
Yeah.
You change your state.
Yeah.
You can start to integrate so much more.
Simple questions like, is this really that big of a problem? So I was doing that yesterday.
Such a simple question.
Because
but,
I was so tired, because I haven't I've been having some sleep issues.
Mm.
So finally I'm back to a good rhythm of sleeping. But yesterday I was just kind of starting to get a good night's sleep. But I was still tired from several days of not.
Yeah.
And there was a problem that was so overwhelming to me. It was depressing me. I was like feeling the depression creep in.
Right.
And I literally asked myself this question that we're hearing certain, again, I'm learning from clients. Some clients are asking themselves this question. I thought, well, that's a really good question. Is this situation really that big of a deal, or is it that I'm tired? In other words, would I feel differently about this if I was fresh and full of energy? And I pictured it in my mind and I instantly knew, oh, yes, of course I would. I would have a different perspective.
Yeah.
And all that does is just take it from it being, this is really the way it is, to, oh, no, this is how I feel about it right now, given a lot of different factors. One, I'm tired. Have I eaten? Did I eat the right foods today? You know, things as simple as that can really impact a whole lot. You know, when you pair this up with instincts and you think about people that are head type plus have a dominant like sexual or social instinct, they can end up a lot in their heads and in a lot of, and in the world of people. And oftentimes forgetting that they have a body that, you know, also communicates quite a bit to them on a daily basis, and that's also a source of wisdom, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, that there's all these sources of wisdom. So, you know, why we do so many of the things we do, whether it's the individual coaching, a lot of what comes up in group coaching, where we take people on a pretty epic journey, even in that first 3 months, let alone people who do like a whole, you know, re-up and do the whole six-month journey with us. Like, we get to know these people. We stay curious. We keep learning from them. But I think one of the reasons I like that particular outlet of group coaching is how much they learn from each other, too, because it just increases your empathy for each other. So, like, our learning, when we talk about our learning, this isn't just us learning from the people we're working with or people on the podcast, but observing people learning from each other.
Yeah.
Like even on this season of the podcast, people learning from each other, seeing how they differentiated, if they even had a, you know, they were the same dominant, same type, but had a different stack, how they were slightly different.
Well,
like incredible.
I can't wait to have this conversation on the webinar that will be coming out real soon that we're going to be doing, because we're going to talk about all these things that we're learning. Much to our surprise, again, we didn't go into this going, I have a theory, let's see if it's true. It was, oh my gosh.
Right.
So you're so different than these others on the same dominant instinct, but so different.
Yeah.
That you're even having a hard time relating entirely to what's happening here.
Right.
Almost every time.
Yeah.
Well, actually every time.
And then you got to the end, you realized, yeah. Oh, that right there, there's yeah. the shift.
There's a shift. There's a different order.
Yeah.
And so we're going to talk a lot more about that and explain what's happening there, what we think is happening, what we're seeing. But what's been fun is even afterwards, some of these groups have gotten together offline.
Yeah.
Like they've said, hey, can we hang out and talk more? And they've been fascinated by what they're learning,
yeah.
how similar they are if they have the same order. And that's been so helpful to them. And it's been so interesting to hear people even begin to see how what they thought was, I'm the way I am because I have this wing.
Right.
That turns out to be, oh, it's the instinct that's doing this.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm a four with a five wing. Oh, you're a social four. Oh, okay. I even did this with somebody I was doing a typing interview for, and the individual said, I'm trying to figure out what my instinct, you know, so we worked through that, and turned out that it was a social instinct. And I said, yeah, and you probably thought you had a five wing. And the person just, you know, just about fell out of their chair like, yes, exactly. Yeah. Well, because again, the instincts match up really well. First of all, they line up quite well with the centers of intelligence. Mm-hmm. And so social matches up real well with the head space and sexual with the heart space and self-pres with the body.
Yeah.
They started to see that, but now had new understanding around, even if I have a five wing, there's complexities around that because I'm not really a five, but there's some aspects of the five. But now it's, no, see the social instinct and what it's doing. Mm-hmm. It's causing you to be in the space of a whole lot of thinking, a whole lot of rationalizing, and you'll oftentimes enjoy interactions with people, with larger groups of people. So that part doesn't fit the five, but it sure does fit with the social instinct.
Yeah.
And then sexual fours will find a lot of mixture between those and tending to, what I've observed, tending to be far more still five wing. But then suddenly there's a flip when it's the self-pres four.
More three.
Almost always. I've yet to meet a self-pres four that doesn't say, my wing type is a three. And then they understand that the self-pres four tends to have more what they call tenacity or grit, the ability to stick at something really long in even suffering through it. And a bit more goal-oriented, you know, tending more towards trying to accomplish a lot in life. Yeah. So that was very helpful to people to start to see, oh, that's why I'm also more protective of my emotions and I don't express them as much. It's because of the energy of self-preservation. Like it's a protective energy. And so there's so much of that we started to discover that was helpful for people to then make sense of why they behave the way they do.
Right.
And then what is then the instinct that is being avoided?
Yeah.
And sometimes almost all the problems, actually, is funny because almost all the problems that they're dealing with tend to be around the, oh, yeah, I don't want to deal with this.
This is the
part of the instinct that I don't want to deal with. Yeah.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, it's funny. So the four with the five wing is the more social, and the five with the four wing is the more sexual five.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is very rare. And I don't know if this is starting to prompt questions for any of you, but like we would love to answer a lot of these questions at the live event. That's kind of one of the reasons we wanted to do it is just be like, let's pull people in and have them ask questions about what's going on, what they've learned through the season, what they're still wondering because of it. Because it definitely prompted a lot of questions. And so I really hope that we can find like a great researcher to comb through all of that data and like,
oh my, that would be
incredible. So, if somebody wants to give us a grant for that,
like, right?
I have a couple of researchers I would love to hire or something to be able to pull some of this data, because when people have been asking, you know, where can I find out more, you know, based on what you guys are learning, like, where did you learn this stuff? I'm like, we're learning it from you all. Like, you all literally are the people who are bringing a lot of this knowledge together. Because we've come across this with some of the literature and stuff that was out there. It reduced some stuff down a little too much, but I'm guessing, did they have a smaller sample size? We definitely have had some large sample sizes through the instincts test, which there's not really competition out there for our instincts test right now. Maybe there will be at some point, but we've, you know, had hundreds and hundreds of people having this data now of seeing these like types and stacks and instincts, it's overwhelming. I don't even know where to start with a lot of this stuff right now, but other than to just like, okay, we're with you, we're staying with you and staying curious, and we're all going to learn from each other and we're all going to grow as in the process of that.
Yeah. We're looking for some sense of order in the midst of the chaos of our lives,
sure.
Right? So
yeah.
We're looking at, why are we doing this? Why do we do all this research? Why do we do all this thinking about things? And it's because if we can make sense of where we are on the map of our own journey, then we can start to make sense of a lot of the reasons why maybe we're bumping into things that
yeah.
you know, over and over again, why we're having similar patterns of behavior. And it starts to organize a lot of that, and then we can engage it, right? If we don't know what the problem is, we're fixing a whole lot of things that maybe don't need to be fixed.
We're using the type to fix the type, which means we're just
absolutely.
Doubling down on a lot of the problems.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And you know, so that's why we do what we do.
Yeah.
And when we can start to see, it's always been a pet peeve of mine. I don't want to use energy to just fix things. I want to know what is broken exactly.
Yeah.
What exactly are we doing here? Because then it's efficient and effective. It has both. It can save a whole lot of useless work and be highly effective in transforming people's lives. So at very least, even before you know what to fix, just having a sense of what's going on.
Yeah.
Helps you to have compassion for yourself, helps you to have compassion for other people around you as well.
Yeah. So where are we taking all this next? Like all this stuff that we've been working on, things that we're trying to learn about, understand, work with people. Like in the last year, we have done group coaching for the first time, and that has just been an incredible experience. Learning so much, seeing people transform. The insights from people who have been through group coaching who were on the panels was just incredible.
Mm.
They were just incredible people and did an incredible job. And, you know, so much of the individual coaching that we're still doing, really working more with companies, wanting to see corporate culture evolve so that people can understand better in that environment because of how much energy that could go into productivity that gets dissipated through interactions and interpersonal conflict because there's an inability to manage that, how much more companies are productive when they understand emotional intelligence. Like all of these are stuff that is where we are going. We would love to see a lot more research stuff that comes out of some of these conversations since we are creating a catalog of data through this podcast. That's what we've been doing. We've created an incredible catalog of data. Like what else do you see is on your heart to want to be a part of, to want to grow in, to want to use all of this to move toward?
Yeah, I mean, I always have a lot of fun ideas, but that question always makes me nervous because I think, I don't know.
Either.
I just, and this is typical for sevens, it's like my dreaded question when I join a group, what do you hope to get out of this class?
Mm.
I always get anxious about that question because I don't have an answer. My answer is, I don't know, we'll find out.
Yeah.
Literally, that's what goes through my head. But then I feel the pressure of coming up with something to be the good student, you know? And but I honestly don't. I have nothing. It's like, I don't know, we'll find out. We'll figure it out. But I think the curiosity in me says, just immerse myself in it and we'll figure it out. We'll find out. We'll learn something. I do have a lot of ideas around how this could be so powerful for people and for organizations. You know, recently was coaching an executive who has begun diving more deeply into the instincts. And she had a profound experience with it where she, an awareness, and she actually used the instincts in such a remarkable way that it started to turn her department around in such a hugely positive way. So she was describing it as, I saw myself with using the social as a dominant social type, using the social instinct, but then recognizing I don't really have a strong self-preservational instinct.
Mm.
But right now what's needed is everybody's tired from this huge project they all undertook that took incredible number of hours. And so I knew there was a self-pres person in our organization who was all into this health, wellness, and, you know, and tapped her to, would you guide us in some you know, some practices that could be really helpful for us. She was so excited to do it that they've been doing these like stretches in the middle of the day. They've been doing these meditations.
Reset the body. Yeah. And the mind.
Yeah. And it's been a reset for them. Yeah, and they've loved it. So then she said, and then what I've done is even in the sexual instinct has been like, if you need to talk more and you would like to have, you know, something that can help you personally develop and you've got those concerns, your well-being, your personal development, come have a conversation with me and we'll go into that. And willingness to have a deeper conversation, deeper connection with individuals. She said that thing has turned everything around in her department. Mm. And I just, to me, that just gave me goosebumps. I was just excited to see someone doing this because that's a model for others. Like, oh yeah, you can actually use all three instincts. You don't have to have all three equally fantastic within you. Sometimes, even in your own personal development, you're going to have to go to somebody else who does better in one area. Like, hey, social is really my repressed. Like, you're good at that.
Yeah.
Could you maybe help set this thing up here? Because I'm not going to get this right. Or, hey, I have to do this and I really am resisting it. What would be some steps I could take? Give me some tips. And in that way, we're starting to, you know, kind of work to help each other in that process of growth. So that takes a lot of the pressure off because sometimes people can hear this and think, is this a podcast about trying to be really perfect through all three instincts, all three centers of intelligence, you know, just completely balanced? And the answer is no, 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 no. You will never be a third, a third, a third.
Right.
But each situation that comes your way gives you an opportunity to ask yourself the question, what instinct is being required in this situation? And can I call up a little bit of it? At the same time, know that my bread and butter is always going to be in this dominant instinct.
Yeah.
And I want to make sure that I'm actually using a lot of that instinct as much as I can throughout the day. But I think that that's a more gracious approach and I think a more helpful and, you know, approach that probably will be more successful long-term, I think, and sustainable long-term.
Yeah. And I love that you brought up the company piece, that this is something that is happening within a company, because we'd had this conversation a couple years ago, how you were saying that so many people in this world with the Enneagram, they say it's just all about individual personal development. It's not really about organizational stuff and they wouldn't work with organizations. And Howard's like, that's where people spend so much time. And it's a great place to actually work on some of your stuff and the way that you want to grow. I would say that people grow sort of in concentric circles. There's places that it's easier to practice growth than others. The easiest place is actually with strangers. So, which is why I think group coaching is super effective.
Yeah.
You're with different people of different types. Then the next concentric circle in is actually work.
Yeah.
Where you have some objectivity because you have to, your employment depends on it. You have very good motivation to work through your issues because you have to get the goal met or whatever. The next concentric circle in is actually your friends. That's actually a little bit harder, but you get to share life without it being completely attached like it is with your nuclear family, which is, you know, your family at home that you live with, which is the next level in. And then the hardest one being family of origin.
Hmm.
So when it comes to those concentric circles, like work is an incredible place to actually practice some growth. Yeah. So is strangers. So we want to work through all of those concentric circles and have growth all the way into the family of origin, which is like the Ram Dass thing. If you think you're enlightened, go home for the holidays.
Oh my,
that's the hardest one to do that.
Yes.
It's hard because we're watching our reactivity every day with our families at home. So why wouldn't we want to help people grow in every single one of those arenas?
Mm.
Like, why wouldn't that be the mission of our lives and the goal of our lives, to see people grow and change in all of those areas? Because all of them matter deeply to your life. You don't just get through work and then go home. That's not the way anyone wants to live anymore. The next generation has absolutely said no to that.
Mm-hmm.
I want to have growth and fulfillment, and I want to be able to be myself, and I want to be able to expand who I am in every area of my life, and so I'm going to. And that is what gives me so much hope, because that is what we want to work toward for everyone we encounter.
Yeah. And the you know, the outside world reflects a lot better to us sometimes who we are than just our own thinking about who we are, you know? And I think that that's a big part that we sure change ourselves if the growth is just going to be by myself.
Yeah,
I'm going to go to some conference. I'm going to be taught about what I need to do or who I need to be as, you know, this type. And then that's it. I go home and then I practice it privately. My goodness, how we shortchange ourselves, because there are people all around us who are reflecting oftentimes back to us how we are being in that world.
Totally.
And the thing that while it may seem safe to us, it actually is harder, surprisingly, because you're working on things you're not entirely sure. There's a little bit of a question in your psyche. It's like, is this really what I should be doing? Is that me? But the feedback from the world of like, you know, this part is okay, really. Like, you don't need to be fixing that. That's not the problem. I mean, for a long time, I thought being serious was what I was supposed to do because, you know, the side of the seven that's always somewhat playful and thinking about play. I mean, as a kid growing up, hearing that that was not acceptable, that shouldn't be. I wanted to be really serious and found out that the people that were closest to me actually preferred my playful spirit. It was other parts that were problematic. That was like, so the part of it that you just can't be present, you know, long enough to actually hear me and see me, that hurts. That's more of the difficulty than it is that you are sometimes being an idiot at home or, you know, at work and whatever. That's fun. We don't have a problem with that. And that was surprising to me. Like, oh, okay. Wow, I've been working on things that I didn't need to work on and other things that I didn't even really pick up on that were more important. While being careful to say, don't be a slave to everybody's thoughts about you either. Yeah. Don't be enslaved by how they see you, because that's not also helpful. And we want to make sure that you have this sort of dance that happens between you and the world around you.
Yeah.
What is the truth that I'm learning about myself, but what is the feedback from the world? And then that will give you the deeper understanding of really the picture of who you are and, you know, in your growth path.
And so for your growth path, there's a lot of content that is out. And if you decide to take a deep dive into this season, you will learn a lot about a lot of people and hopefully a lot about yourself. I was surprised at how much I learned about myself from other types that were not me, but either had a similar instinct or similar stack. I learned a ton from those people. We have some other things coming up for people to jump in and learn from us on as far as how we see things, why we see things the way we do. So we're going to offer a whole class in June that people can do a 6-week class with Joel and I. There is still some group coachings that are coming up that if you wanted to jump in a group, those are limited to 5 people. The hard thing with those is always because they're all in person, which the class doesn't necessarily have to be. You don't have to be available at that specific time. You can come in person or watch later. But the groups are hard for finding the right time that works for everybody.
Yeah.
And it's even getting more complicated as it's global. Like one of my groups yesterday, it's 5 people, but it's 4 countries with those 5 people. So it's all 5 are in different time zones of the participants. So trying to figure out some of that stuff, it's complicated. Yeah. So, you know, you can get on the waiting list for a group and we'll try and find times that work for people. That's really a helpful way to go forward. But we're also going to have the class, and we're also even going to do something really simple, a video class that'll be out in the next month or so, where people can walk yourself through different aspects of growth. It's a great refresher for people who want to remember sort of key things that we talk about, the things that we find ourselves returning to over and over again because they're so important and they have to be remembered. This comes up all the time when I'm in coaching sessions. So many times I don't feel like I'm showing something new. I'm remembering, I'm helping someone remember something that is already within them that they've forgotten. And so they're like 12-minute videos.
Yeah, real short.
They're real short that we did to just be this refresher and this reminder course. And so some of those things that you can jump on, if you're on our newsletter, you'll absolutely hear about those things. And we really hope you can join us this Wednesday night, 8 p.m. Eastern time, for The Instincts. If you have a ticket, you can still watch it after the fact. But that's just something we wanted to do on the back end of the season to celebrate, to be with a lot of you and answer questions in real time and share some really fascinating stuff. I'm super excited about what Suzanne's going to share. I think it's going to be really helpful about how the Instinct can help you discover type more clearly. And so there's a lot of super fun stuff coming up. And so I'm just so thrilled. I'm so excited about all the stuff we get to do. Like, it's super fun.
Yeah.
I love that I finish calls and I literally like stand up and put my hands in the air like, yes, that was such an incredible experience, you know?
Yeah. It's such a gift to us.
Oh, it's so amazing. So you all have given us just the best work we've ever gotten to do in our lives. And so thank you.
Yeah.
We're excited to see where this goes next.
Yeah.
So thank you so much for listening. You can sign up for our Live Instincts event. You can sign up for that on our website, www.theartofgrowth.org. There's a banner right at the top of the page. And even if you can't make the event, anyone who has a ticket can watch it later. You can also sign up for a new 6-week class. We are starting at the beginning of June. The class is called The Enneagram, Who You Are and What to Do About It. So this isn't like group coaching. This is a straight-up class, and it's 6 weeks straight starting the first Wednesday in June. It'll be every Wednesday evening for 6 weeks. Make sure you're subscribed to the podcast. We have some really neat content coming up as far as what the instincts look like at work. You can take our free instincts test at theartofgrowth.org, our Enneagram test there as well as a youth Enneagram test. Make sure you are subscribed. If you leave us a review on iTunes, it really helps the algorithm to help other people find this work. You can follow us on Instagram at Art of Growth. And really, that's it for this week. So we hope to see you soon and see you at the Live Instincts event. We are honored to be a part of your growth journey. But for this week, my friends, take a moment to pause. Often we do not do this. We don't take a moment, pause, and celebrate how far we've actually come. Often we are so focused on our growth, on the things we need to improve, that we don't pause and see how far we've actually come. May you this week pause. May you take some stock in the direction of celebration to see how far you've actually come and get an even better glimpse of where you are going. And may this increase the energy of hope and joy in the core of your being. Grace and growth, my friends.